Alrighty, so here we are.
Here we are.
So let's give them a sense of why we're here like this.
Okay.
Go for it.
I'll do it. So last week, Dr. Gary talked about having a question and answer, ask the minister. And so I have taken some questions from all of you and put them together. The other thing that happened was in conscious conversations, when we had lots of conversations with community members, we learned that there were people that wanted to hear answers to their questions from ministers. And so we're doing this for the first time with Dr. Gary, and eventually we'll do it with Dr. Jane as well. Right?
Yeah.
It all depends upon how they treat me.
Yeah, that's right. Let's see. So we did the 9 o'clock service, so I've got those questions, but I'm going to throw out, and he has no idea what the questions were this morning, but I've got some different ones that I'm going to ask this service as well. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, let's do this. Dr. Gary,
yes.
You've been a minister, a Unity minister, for nearly 40 years. So many of us want to know, what was it that led you to becoming a Unity minister?
Well, I met a young girl in working for the phone company, and she informed me that she went to this church, this Unity church, and her father was on the board, and he meditated every day. And it was such an unusual thing for me to hear meditation and church in the same sentence. Because I had been an undergraduate, my undergraduate studies was in Eastern philosophy and religion, and I had been started martial arts back then when I was 20 years old, and so the concept of having church have anything to do with what I was more aligned with, the contemplative disciplines and practices, was very unusual. And so so I went in and experienced what it was like, and it was such a wondrous feeling, in part because I think me and my fiance at the time were the youngest people in the church, you know, and so at 21 years old, when I first walked into Unity ministry, I looked around and I saw all of these like 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, you know, and so anyway, so in no uncertain terms, we were literally loved into a place of not only welcoming but prominence in the ministry. And so I was asked to serve on the board of trustees when I was 22 years old, and I was on David McClure's board, his board, when he was the minister at the church. So my involvement in Unity began just really in so many ways, just me deepening my relationship to my then first wife, as well as really seeing myself being mentored by the community itself. And later on, after David left, and Gwen Normant, Reverend Gwen Normant, came, she asked me to be her minister's assistant, which meant that every Sunday I would be asked to do the meditation. And this is at 22 years old. She would tell me that the only thing that you could not do is you could not read anything original. You had to create everything. So she would require of me to come up with a meditation, original meditation, each Sunday. And so I was basically mentored and participated in Unity's correspondence school. It was way before they had computers, and so you actually wrote letters. Remember when that used to happen?
I know.
So anyway, my introduction to Unity and my first marriage and being supported by the spiritual community and having a father and mother-in-law that was the principles of this ministry, I really got a sense that a Unity community was something very, very special. And so I began my journey, and it felt like it was a natural fit.
Nice. Cool. Thank you. We had a question from someone that she asks, when I joined Unity, it was a church. Now it is called a spiritual center, although it still has the format of a church. Do you think that this is confusing to someone unfamiliar with Unity who is looking for a Sunday service?
So the whole dynamic of church and now we're called a center has a story behind it, because right now, my work in the greater New Thought movement, Jane and I are both principals in the New Thought movement, which means that We're very well known in both Unity and Centers for Spiritual Living circles. In our journey in New Thought, Centers for Spiritual Living was originally called Church of Religious Science. And talk about confusing, you know, Church of Religious Science. And so they, many years ago, went through a process where they hired a consultant who did some research around their brand and discovered that there were 50 million individuals that were in a more progressive cultural dynamic called the cultural creatives. I don't know if anybody has heard about the cultural creatives, but there it's a group of 50 million people in North America that are aligned with progressive Christian thought, or aligned with being environmentally sensitive, morally progressive. Those folks are really aligned with our teaching, but they won't come because we have church in our name. And when they shifted from Church of Religious Science to Centers for Spiritual Living, all of a sudden their increased engagement went up 20% just by changing their name. And then so as I was a part of that with them, I also brought that process to the New Thought movement, or to Unity, and we went through that same process and came up with Centers for Spiritual Living, Unity Center for Spiritual Living. And so most Unity churches in our denomination converted, taking church out of their name and replacing it with Unity Spiritual Center, because that is more aligned with the demographic that is really receptive to us. And as we do that, we're also recognizing that church is fine is in terms of what we call it for those of us who've been raised in that, but the millennials or those who are really not so much into religion but more into secular humanism, they're more drawn to a community, a spiritual community. And so to have a spiritual center with a church experience or a worship service in it is a different dynamic than just having a church. And so we're moving away from the plop, pay, pray model of ministry, where it's all about just coming to church and sitting down and having someone run their trip on you, and then you decide how much that's worth to you, and then you support that. That dynamic of ministry just doesn't work, and it's not very exciting, and it's not sustainable in these times. So, did I answer the question?
You did.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. Okay, I'm going to switch it up a little bit.
All right.
In many, if not most, religious traditions, it is considered a sin to be anything other than heterosexual. And the Bible is often used as justification for this deeply entrenched belief. As such, many LGBTQIA people are condemned and punished by the religions, society, and dominant culture around them. As a Unity minister with a son who is gay, how has your ministry to this group in particular been informed, and what might your message be to them?
So I haven't been extremely public about our private life, and so introducing my son, who is gay, and his family by virtue of inviting him to sing at our Broadway on Bernard show, brings the whole dynamic of the challenges that this demographic, the gay and lesbian community, have. And just recently, I posted something on my Facebook page that our grandchild Derek was bullied in his school recently. A kid wrote a note to him, said, "Are you gay?" And the exchange led him to actually having to little Derek having to write back, "I'm straight and I love Jesus," as a way of dealing with the situation. And so to me, the plight of my son and his husband and my our grandson is reminiscent of the unintended consequences of what happens when we make religion and politics kind of our moral compass, as opposed to really examine the teachings of Jesus that really are all about love. And you find nothing in his message that would suggest that he would leave anybody out. And that to recognize that our Creator creates us all, and for us to divide ourselves based upon a book that was written and conceived and brought together by a bunch of homophobic, old, bearded people. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. And part of my personal struggle is Jane and I have academic doctoral degrees in theology, where we have studied God, basically, and all the ways in which humankind have reduced that mystical, unknowable dimension to a religion or to a belief system that really is all about control. It's all about, you know, making people behave or think a certain way. And so there's nothing in Scripture that warrants us to have any separation between us. And if we are reading that, or if our ministers or spiritual leaders are using Scripture as a weapon or as a way to divide us as opposed to uniting us, then that's malpractice.
Yeah.
It's malpractice.
Thank you. As we move to becoming more mission-centric as opposed to minister-centric, what will this mean as far as the expectations of ministers and their job duties and availability to the community?
So first of all, just to have a context of why are we transitioning from minister-centric to mission-centric ministry, and what's that implication to with respect to those who are in leadership, such as ministers and the community that is experiencing this. So 9 out of 10 churches, congregational ministries in North America are in decline. And in part because of our current ministry practice, which is centered around the minister being ostensibly the primary caregiver of a family system dynamic, which is what churches become. In other words, we're a spiritual family. And when ministers are in the role of being the parent of the system, it can have both unintended consequences that can produce things like drama and disappointment and all kinds of power and control issues. So the effort to move towards mission-centric ministry is really about decoupling our intentionality for how we're gathering together and not make it about our alignment with who the minister is and the minister's vision of what the organization is supposed to engage, but rather to create intentionality around what is the purpose of this community and what is it seeking to fulfill that can become the organizing principle of what we're about. And then that organizing principle determines the roles and the accountabilities that the leaders or the ministers and those who are in service aspire to. And so our effort to move towards mission-centric ministry is about moving our intentionality around creating an organization that's all about helping people transform their lives. And then once a person's life is transformed, to empower them to make a difference in their world. And when we build our organizing principle around that intentionality, then we're in the question, well, how do the ministers serve that intent? And so it's not about directing or parenting so much as it is about coaching or modeling what it looks like to be in ownership of one's life. And in that sense of ownership, knowing that our effort together as we create an energetic field where transformation and making a difference is what we aspire to, then we're not here to have the ministers make us feel better about ourselves. We're here to have the ministers be empowered. The ministers are here to be empowering of the community, as opposed to being the voice of how you should be or how you should feel or how you should look or act.
Nice. Thank you. Well, that leads to the next question. You've been willing to share some of your own personal struggles when it comes to your life's journey, including past marriages, your ministry highs and lows, and being a father. Someone wanted to know how you have been able to get beyond the shame and forgive yourself.
Okay, so last Sunday when I talked about my story a bit, I mentioned that I was first to graduate and get highest grades, and then got my first job, got the highest pay, and I was the first student that was fired within 9 months of my first church And so in the course of going through the years of in which I then took that experience and created a story as to why I was not fit for this work, and I dropped out of this work. And in my process of doing what I was asked to do in order to be reinstated, I eventually did all of those things, but I didn't necessarily let go of the story as to what I was really carrying with me that was really evidence that I felt like I was a victim or I was wrongly judged in some fashion. But as I mentioned last Sunday, that there came a time in my ministry, even though I was withdrawn from the organization, didn't have much to do with the movement, I was invited to take on a different perspective with respect to my struggle, and that is to prove that all the experiences that I had were really for me. And so I had to reconcile my feeling of shame and guilt and my unforgiveness with the reality that how could I still possess those beliefs, those feelings, and that story if I was in the intent to use my experience as evidence that's always for me? So I had to let go of the story and begin to focus on really looking at myself and seeing what was really now my healing journey, and that was to get in touch with little Gary, who was living in the belief that he was a disappointment, that he was not good enough, that he didn't measure up, and my evidence was my failure. And so with a deep effort of calling forth self-compassion, beginning to just sort of be with myself in a sense that this is hard. Have you ever had an experience that was hard? It's important to be with that experience and feel that it's hard. Because until you actually feel that, you can't get to a place of self-compassion. Because that's what we all have to recognize, is that for every one of us, there's going to be aspects of our journey that are very hard. And if we are unable to kind of be with that difficulty and loving ourselves as we are trying to feel our way into a better place, then we're locked into trying to negotiate the situation with how I'm feeling, and that's not the way it works. We have to renegotiate how we're going to feel with what's happening in our life. And so I was able to do that in time. It took several years. But as a result, the eye of the storm, the Q process, and in part of my healing was associated with that, my cancer healing.
Thank you. So what advice would you... Well, actually, I'm going to ask this question because you... Well, what advice would you give to someone, and you kind of answered this already, who is right in the middle of their story, and it's really hard, and they're feeling that deep shame, and they're having a hard time forgiving themselves? What advice would you give them?
So you're right. Basically, I answered that okay already.
But now
I'm
just
okay. So if you think about it as being... Okay, we're sort of locked into our own self system, and there is a dynamic associated with what happens in the brain when we become so focused on our story and the emotional content that keeps that story activated, almost as if it's a feedback loop. And so there has to be something that interrupts that to freeze us from that cycle, because it's very difficult to lift ourselves out of that, but until we break that cycle, we can't get to a place where we can see ourselves. So it's almost like we have to see ourselves and be able to observe ourselves and how we're so stuck in the connection, believing that for whatever reason, what we have means that there's something wrong or bad about me. Because that's what the shame, that's what the guilt's really connected to. And when we can separate and see, objectify what we're having deep within as our hurt self and sort of see it, now this is something that I took on. I took on this belief that I'm not enough. I took on this belief that I'm a disappointment. And the world supports me in turning that into shame and guilt and regret. And I need to know that that's a systemic dynamic that happens in the world when I'm not... When I'm not conscious. I'll be perfectly still from now on. So as I'm able to really understand the dynamics of what happens in the context of perception and meaning making, how my brain works and how consciousness kind of creates my reality, I'm able to see that the shame and the guilt and regret that I carry is an artifact of the dynamic of believing that I'm separate, believing that I'm less than, believing that I'm unworthy. And as I see that as a systemic, unintended consequence of living as if what I'm having is my truth instead of how I'm being with it, then until I kind of I'm able to sort that out, then I can begin to look at myself again in the sense of first seeing how difficult it is to be in this world, and then recognizing, giving myself that love and compassion, that understanding that knows that just as you lift up a child and cuddle that child who is unable to really know its worth or know its potential, we have to do that for ourselves. And then ultimately we have to see that wherever we're in judgment, it's really symptomatic of our really not looking within ourself and really doing that deeper inner work that rescues that inner child. And that's the healing journey. That's what we need to focus on.
Thank you. How much time do we have?
We've got lots of time.
Okay, good. So I'm going to ask this question. Now, how do you personally get centered when you're in the middle of a triggering situation or conflict, and do you ever just want to slap a person?
Be honest.
I don't ever want to slap anybody.
Good. I didn't think so.
I want to kick ass, though. No, I have changed quite a bit in the years. I'm pretty even. You can ask Jane. I mean, it's pretty easy for me to kind of maintain a kind of a centered presence. It's not to say that I don't get triggered. I do. And for me, my biggest challenge is not allowing stories to run. And let me just kind of let the stories run. I have trained myself to become aware of when I'm emotionally altered, when I shift out of and into some form of anxiety or emotional discomfort. And I've trained myself to recognize that when I shift and feel those things, I have shifted out of my state of being connected and heart-centered, and that I've dipped into an unconscious reflexive pattern that my self system is simply running, and I'm paying attention to it as if it's something important. I'm supposed to do something about this. But I have installed or created in terms of my own spiritual practice a way of interrupting that kind of feedback loop, and then I recognize, no, this is my self system trying to get my attention. And I can thank that part of myself and say, okay, that's not the energy I want to bring to this moment now. And then I have to simply reaffirm what it is that I'm seeking to move myself into. And so part of the challenge is that when we're not intentionally creating our future, we're unintentionally living our past.
Write that down.
Oh, you're done.
I guess that's
good. I mean, that was good. That was good. That was good. Thank you. Okay. So another question that many people had, including community members, some with advanced stage cancer and others with friends or family with cancer, and they wanted to know more specifics about your alternative approach to cancer treatment and that kind of journey, how you got through that, and the types of protocols you used and the support you received.
Okay, so that's a whole long talk, basically. So just in a nutshell, I used what's called a full extract cannabis oil, or Rick Simpson oil. You take the bud and a pound of pot, and you dissolve it in 200 proof organic grain alcohol, and it leaches out all of the cannabinoids, and then you boil that off, and you are left with a thick, oily resin that you ingest. And you have to develop a tolerance, because you have to be able to ingest up to 200 milligrams of THC in a day.
Wow.
2,000 milligrams. 5 milligrams is sufficient to get someone intoxicated. This is 2,000 milligrams. So I had to develop a tolerance for that, and I did. I developed a tolerance for that in 3 weeks. It was not easy, and Jane could give you more information about how to be with someone who's doing this journey. You're going to save that question for her later. But suffice to say that I did develop a tolerance for it, and I was within 60 days cancer, all the tumors were gone, and my oncologist was totally blown away by it. He'd never seen such a thing. So let me just say that was not very easy, and anybody who's tried it has not been able to follow this protocol. However, in the last 3 years since my journey had begun, and there's all kinds of new things that have developed, and now what I am doing is I'm using medical cannabis like a supplement and consuming it raw. There's no psychoactivity, and if done with the proper formulation of CBD and THC, it can have extraordinary health benefits. Western medicine is not wanting this information to be that widespread and available. And so it's another aspect of my journey has been the most challenging circumstances has always created a ministry for me after I've overcome it. And so my failures as an early minister created the Eye of the Storm, the Q process. My cancer and my journey through that has caused me to become very educated in this arena. And so I'm happy to share information with anybody in this church. And I would love to have an event where I talk about in more detail how to make the material, the supplements, and how to receive professional guidance through medical professionals that are in California that you can call and talk to and have a video conference around any of these issues. And because Washington State is such a open state, all of the products that are available for treating various serious illnesses are readily available in the state. It's just a matter of getting the information, and I have some of that information.
Great. Thank you. Do we have time?
One more.
Okay. Well, I actually don't have another question, but is there anybody in the audience who has a question that maybe came from what Dr. Gary's already discussed or something different? Anybody have a question?
How did you hear about this different type of treatment?
Okay, repeat the question.
Okay, she's asking, how did Dr. Gary hear about this alternative treatment?
Okay, so first of all, let me just mention that my previous wife, Nan, died of a glioblastoma. Died of glioblastoma multiforme, very, very deadly, serious brain cancer. And I experienced her going through all of the treatments, and I decided I'd never follow that journey. So when I got diagnosed myself, I immediately began exploring medical cannabis, because I had had some prior experience in enjoying the recreational dimension of it when I was going through all my early ministerial shame. So I was somewhat familiar with the effects, and I felt like I could manage the intensity of the treatment. But what got me to do this was I went to a recreational pot shop looking for CBD. I didn't know what I was looking for. I didn't know anything about the journey, and I just asked the young gal, 22 years old, do you have anything for cancer? And she said, well, yeah. But I didn't know what to ask for. And so she wrote on this little notepad, a post-it note, RSO. And she said, Google it. And I Googled it, and it stands for Rick Simpson Oil. And Rick Simpson was the first person to demonstrate the efficacy of the whole plant extract as being able to rapidly cure the most deadly cancers on the planet. And since his healing and subsequent sharing of his information, most of his protocol is now studied in Israel and other countries, as well as other applications. See, we're mostly familiar with the two cannabinoids, THC and CBD. There are 400 different cannabinoids in the whole plant, and all those cannabinoids have sacred healing properties, and research is now making formulations that dose toward to specific cancers as opposed to RSO being the right thing for all of this. So there's so much education that can happen, but you have to know where to look for it, because just like in politics, Western medicine is not able to touch it because of the Schedule I drug status of cannabis. So, all right, that's our time.
Thank you, Dr. Gary. I know I'm not alone in saying that everything that you've shared with us today has been very profound, at least for me. Do you guys agree?
Yes.
Yeah. So we really appreciate everything that you do.
Thank you, Dr. Gary and Amber. Gary, your openness and your vulnerability is such a blessing to all of us here. I feel so blessed to be in the presence when you speak, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I got to turn to Unity stands for peace in the presence of violence, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths to God, for we know that there's only one power, one presence, one life. So whoever you are, wherever you are on your journey of transformation, you are definitely welcome here. We would especially like to welcome anyone who might be here for the first time. If this is your first time and you feel comfortable raising your hand, our ushers have a gift packet for you. Is anybody here for the first time? Welcome, welcome. We're glad to have you. Good, lots of hands. On the outside of the packet, there's a form you can fill out to be added to our mailing list for our weekly e-news update and our quarterly newsletter. If you're interested, please fill it in and drop it in the love offering bag as it comes around, instead of feeling obligated to give a donation today. Also, after service, you can take this packet to our barista stand and get a free beverage of your choice. If you did not fill out a name tag before services and you'd like one, you can fill one out. Oh, we're not doing that anymore. We don't have any intakes there. Okay. We also want to welcome our online viewers and thank you for joining us this morning. And send those checks in right away, okay? There is a donate button at the bottom of the screen. Now it's time to welcome and greet each other with a handshake, a high five, a hug, whatever you're comfortable with. And before we do that, we'll have our welcome song.
Please stand and join us in singing Growing Love.
Thank you. Yahoo.
Wait for the crowd.
All right, thank you. It's always hard to get the 11 people to sit down, isn't it? That's all right. It's time now for us to celebrate abundance together as we share our tithes and love offerings. I invite you to hold your offering in your hand and in your heart. And if you are joining us online, you can use the donate button that is on our website. And all in seriousness, we take this moment to bring forth the feelings of gratitude and generosity for all that we have in this world and all that we can send forth. Let's say together our love offering blessing. Together, I know that my giving blesses and multiplies all that I am, all that I have, and all that I give and receive. I give thanks for the abundance that is mine to share.
Thank you.
Isn't that beautiful? Absolutely beautiful. We give thanks for these gifts and for those who have given them as we send forth to bless our world. And so it is. Amen. And as we're giving thanks today for the gifts we are receiving at the Unity Spiritual Center, we want to take time to thank all of those in service to our ministry. And there's a lot of people that deserve thanks. Today, we've selected the welcome team. Is there anybody here right now from the welcome teams with a yellow scarf? Okay. They usually wear yellow scarves, and I think lots of us have been. If you've ever been on the welcome team, please stand right now so that we can acknowledge you. I'm already standing, so, okay. Let's acknowledge the welcome. I think there's a need for more people to be on the welcome team. So, yes, so we need a welcome team leader now, and I we're not going to end the service till somebody stands up and says they're going to do that. So, you know, kind of the old style, well, let's pass the plate again. All right. See somebody on the staff or a board member or one of the co-ministers and let them know you'd love to do that. And actually, we're all the welcome team here. We can welcome everyone, especially new people. We're glad to have the new people here today. All right. And now, our chaplains today are Cheryl and Tim. We're very lucky. This is a wonderful, wonderful program in our church. They have been holding the entire service in prayer for us. And if you have anything that is heavy on your heart or that you would like to celebrate, you can pray with one of our chaplains, and they will hold it in prayer with you. They will be at the front of our sanctuary right after the service. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for this service that you provide. Thank you both. You can also fill in a prayer request form found in, yes, give them a hand, yes. You can also fill in a prayer request that's found in your seat pocket, and you can place it in the prayer box here or the one that's in the foyer. Our team will pray for 7 days, send it on to Silent Unity for 30 days. And if you know of anybody that is in the hospital and has requested or a shut-in and they've requested a visit from one of our chaplains, there's a form that can also be filled out there. We appreciate that very, very much. So, it's time to welcome in our children. So, we will sing them in when they come. When they come, I think they're coming. Could you do 6 or 8 bars of When the Saints Go Marching? No, I'm joking. Isn't it a gorgeous day? Aren't we lucky? Aren't we lucky to be here in this place with everyone? It's truly remarkable. All right, here we go.
Singing for the love of our life. We are singing for the joy of our life. We are singing for this love of our life. Singing for this joy is our life. We are singing. Wahoo! We are singing. We are singing. Wahoo! We are singing for this joy is our life.
And now we have a special presentation.
We do.
We are so blessed to have our young people with us at the Spiritual Center, aren't we?
Yes,
yes we are. And we want to especially honor two young ladies today who are graduating from high school as well as YOU. But they're going to be back anyway. But we want to honor that to our graduates. And so we have for each of you one of my books. I know that's weird, but the reason for that is not so, you know, you can read my book. But this book has in it all these different wonderful ways of being. And we as a congregation have gone through and put post-it notes on different pages when we see these things in these girls and told them so. And so we're going to pass these on to them. If there's anyone here who has not yet filled it in, you could probably see them after the service and ask to get your post-it notes, so it's probably not too late. But we will pass them on now. We have one for Danica, and we have one for Liz, and we want to bless you both on your journey. Sure, you want to say?
Oh, yeah. Hi. I think it's too low.
It's coming. Oh, hi. So my name is Danica. I'll be around for the next year since I have the co-regional officer position. But I wanted to say a special thanks to Jeremiah and Ray. Ray's up here. Jeremiah's in Missoula right now. But those were the two sponsors that were here on my first day at YOU, and they like kept me coming. And it's been such a great way to spiritually grow here. And if anybody wants to watch my graduation from college, because I'm getting my AA, it is being live streamed on the SFCC website June 14th at 7 p.m. So come watch me graduate.
You want to say something else?
Sure, I didn't know you were going to say anything. Hey, I'm short. Yeah, it's all cool. I don't remember my first day here. I've been here since I was 3 years old. It's not like I'm leaving. I practically live here. So, yeah, it's cool.
Thank you, girls. We wish you the best. All right, we're grateful for our young people here at Unity Spiritual Center, and we're even more grateful for the people, the adults, the people that work with them and spend time with them and help them and mold them. Let's take a moment to bless our children, youth, and those in service to our children and youth. Together, be the love you are, sing the song you hear, share your joy of life with people far and near. And for ourselves, be the love we are, sing the song we hear, share our joy of life with people far and near. Okay, find your flock. All right. Please stand as you are able and join together for our closing prayer, followed by the peace song. Together, the light of God surrounds us. I am the light of God. The love of God enfolds us. I am the love of God. The power of God protects us. I am the power of God. The presence of God watches over us. I am the presence of God. All we are, God is, and all is well. And that's the truth. answer to the question is question everything.